Welcome to Ray and Tay Today. It's Monday. Woo! BCS title game. Come on.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. It's another Championship Monday, this time in college. So we'll get into that, don't you worry. But you're listening to Ray and Tay Today, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor. You want to join us on a busy, fun-filled show, give us a call. It's a special show, too. 718-664-9098. Like always, rayandtaytoday@gmail.com, rayandtaytoday.com. Great interactive website. Tweet us. Facebook us at Ray and Tay Today. Ray, let them know, besides the BCS and NFL playoffs, what are we talking about today, man? Special guest.
Yes, we do. We have a special guest on the show. But first, we'll start out with breaking news like we always do. We'll talk about college football. We'll talk about the bowl games that we just had over this past weekend. We'll get into this BCS championship game, number one Florida State against number two Auburn. So we'll get the football out of the way. And then about midway through the show, we're going to have a guest, a very special guest. He is a sports documentary producer by the name of Andrew Muscato, and he's put together a few documentaries that I think you guys will be really interested in. One of them is around Ralph Branca, pitcher for the Brooklyn Dodgers, who gave up a very famous home run. Another one is on NCAA, the business of college
sports. Schooled, yeah.
Schooled, yeah. Very, very interesting.
Of college sports, yeah.
He'll be joining us. We'll be talking about how he got into the film business and documentaries and sports documentaries, and I think you'll have a blast with that. And then if we have some time at the end of the show, we'll get into our NBA talk. We've had some injuries. We've had some ups and downs this past week in the NBA, and we'll bring you that as well.
Yeah, a lot of players are hurt. That's never good. So let's jump right into the college talk first. Before we review the Sugar and Cotton Bowl, which both were amazing, let's say congrats to Charlie Strong, the new head coach and the first African-American head coach of the Texas Longhorns. I think from Louisville to Texas and, you know, defensive coordinator of the Florida Gators, great recruiter, did a lot with Louisville. I think this is a great hire, and, you know, Texas football, I think, is in good hands again. I like the hire, and definitely we wish him well with all that's going on over there at Texas.
Yeah, the one comment there is that he's a great football guy by all accounts. The question is he a good fit for that Texas program where you need to be a CEO, a politician, you know, the mayor of Austin, the head honcho of the Longhorn Network. You got to make yourself available to the media. So there's a little bit of a culture clash, but definitely from a football perspective, this guy's unbelievable. Defensive coordinator for two national championship teams in Florida. Head coach, 22-3 the last couple years at Louisville, turned that program into a major college football powerhouse, brought Teddy Bridgewater away from Florida, the state of Florida, the University of Florida.
Well, he recruited Florida well. Yeah, he recruited a lot of talent from Florida. So
that's great. Great hire for Texas. I hope they give him enough leeway where he can just focus on football and he doesn't have to get caught up too much.
I think they will, and I think it was time for Mac Brown, and you know, it was something that I, you know, sort of predicted way early in the show in the college football season, and it came to fruition. And you know, I think that's sort of where things are at. Real quick, spin around in some of these notes. Yesterday in the Packers loss, we'll talk about it. Sam Shields, just a MCL, so it's a sprain, so good for him. The Colts, moving on in their victory, they signed wide receiver Deion Branch. That warms Ray's heart. Former Patriot, right?
Take that, Bill Belichick. I'm Bill Belichicking Bill Belichick.
you got to like that. And then, you know, this is interesting. Just, you know, a couple of interesting notes. You know, we know some guys are going pro. DeAnthony Thomas, Blake Bortles, the quarterback from UCF. And your boy woke up this morning after the loss, you know, Saturday loss, DeSean Jackson, and he's talking about he wants a raise at wide receiver. And granted, look, 82, you know, receptions in a big year, so DeSean Jackson wants some more money, you know, not a surprise.
Didn't he just get a raise 2 years ago?
Yeah, two years ago.
That was Andy Reid, right? Andy Reid, that was one of the last things he dealt with was his holdout, was the DeSean Jackson holdout.
Exactly. And then your boy Jake Locker said he's willing to compete for the quarterback job, and we'll see who the new head coach is over the weekend. Mike Munchak was fired, and he's getting ready to already interview for the Penn State job, but Tennessee let him go. He did not want to change some of his coaches. And
the Dolphins
Packers,
fired their offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
So Mike Sherman got fired down in Miami. I don't know how you fire an offensive coordinator when two-fifths of your offensive line goes down. Terrible offensive line, underachieving Mike Wallace. I get it, but hey, you know what? I don't know. You need to make change.
Yeah.
I get it, and he was probably the easiest guy to let go.
Definitely, definitely. And you know what else is interesting? Just real quick, Celtics make a little trade. I don't know if you saw this with the Grizzlies. Courtney Lee for Jared Bayless, and they use the Rudy Gay trade exemption to even out the money since Lee's contract's a little bit, you know, higher. The Gasol-Bynum trade rumors are heating up. I think it's ridiculous. If the Lakers do this, it makes no sense, especially since Bynum has a two-year deal and Gasol is coming off the books, and Bynum is a, you know, plays, does more bowling than he does play basketball.
Yeah, but his second year isn't really guaranteed. So they maneuvered it nicely in Cleveland when they signed Bynum. So I think it's the team options for the second year. So they're doing that more for salary cap issues.
Yeah,
than really
investing
in Bynum.
It's definitely, you know. And, you know, that's it with the quick news, man. And you know what? Let's get into this college football. I mean, besides the BCS, just stepping back and looking backwards for a second, the Cotton and the Sugar Bowl were amazing. I mean, to me, you know, I got those two right, but Tay Ray is killing Tay in the college football picks in our college bowl mania. But, one thing I will say this. I thought that both, you know, we had the caller, Mike call in, great caller, but I think where he was wrong was that even in this long layoff and even with all four of these teams being disappointed that they weren't playing tonight, they all, give those kids credit, they gave us some of the best BCS bowl games that you could see this year and maybe
history.
Yeah,
nobody laid an egg, and if you think about it, all four teams, well, two won, right? But the other two could have easily won the game because – both teams had the ball in the fourth quarter driving for the winning score, right? So Oklahoma State was driving for the winning score, and they were down, but they had essentially it wasn't a pick six, but it was a fumble six, right? Yeah. And so they were down three, and then boom, they're down
lose the
game. Yeah. And even Alabama, you know, there was a chance
Ohio
Alabama
State
to come tie the game up. Yeah, so it's a great college bowl season. You know, people knock the bowl and the BCS, and they should be knocked because really you should have a playoff. I think next year is good. I think a 4-team playoff is good. An 8-team might be ideal. Not sure yet. But you know what? At the end of the day, a lot of these bowl games, when you're pitting
top
10 teams against each other. No, I was going to say the opposite. I was going to say they're good matchups. I mean,
they're great games. They're great games, but I think if you don't have the playoff and these guys have no shot to be a number one, it's a great matchup, but in some ways it is meaningless. And then when you look at it for the next level, for the NFL draft, sometimes the college bowl games can get players over, you know, a little overrated
towards the draft. That's on the NFL talent people. I don't know what happens. They drink this pixie dust at the
combine.
Yeah,
that and then
the
Senior Bowl week. Yeah, they get the Kool-Aid
the combine,
going. Yeah,
the Senior Bowl week. And
but wait,
the
we got to hype up your boy, though. You acting like, yo, I mean, come on. We got to talk about Sammy Watkins. Can the church say amen? Taj Boyd, first of all, Braxton Miller and Boyd, I think Braxton Miller's coming back. Taj Boyd, I think second, third round pick.
prove that he – I think he could be a backup quarterback. Like you always say, is he one of the best 32? Maybe not, but, you know, is he, you know, top 60? I think so. Tosh Boyd played his butt off. And Sammy Watkins and then the 6'5 Bryant, there were some great receivers, plus from Missouri, Beckham. I mean, you got some super talent this year. I think a wide receiver coming into the draft. But I just love what Sammy Watkins did. I mean,
yeah.
You know, what was it, 227, 16 receptions?
Yeah, I said Ohio State before. I meant Alabama, you know, coming down with the ball with a chance to win. You know what was crazy about that game, though?
No, you said Alabama. You mean Ohio State. Yeah,
I meant
Ohio State.
Right. I said Alabama,
yeah.
And Ohio State. But you know what's
Carlos
crazy about
Hyde,
that
though?
Game?
That's an NFL player, right?
Carlos Hyde is a first-round NFL player. He's cut in that mold of you know, your boy Le'Veon Bell, Eddie Lacy. He's going to be a first-rounder, one of these guys that if he doesn't get hurt, he's an NFL player for a decade. But this Clemson team, you know what? Good for them. They got punched in the mouth a couple times. A couple of their losses were bad losses. But you
great
know what?
Back.
On a neutral field down in Miami, they went and took care of business. And this kid, Sammy Watkins, we saw it as a freshman, right? We saw this kid. Sammy Watkins and Tosh Boyd is maybe the best combo, you know, in college that we've seen in a long, long time. But this kid, Sammy Watkins, I mean, he's got Dennis Bryant written all over him. I mean, you know, he's not the unbelievable
stud. But he's more of a good
stud.
He's a little humble, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but I'm saying in terms of physical ability, in terms of the ability to go get the ball in traffic, speed, great hands. You know, you need to be really come from you know, like a direct descendant of heaven to be Megatron, right? You're physically just more gifted than anybody. But if you're a normal athlete or even above average athlete, and you've got great hands and great wide receiver skills, that's Sammy Watkins. I mean, this guy is going to be probably the number one receiver taken. And between Watkins,
might even be a top 10 pick.
Evans, he'll be top five. I firmly believe he'll be a top five pick. I mean, five of the top eight teams need quarterbacks, so that's a problem. But you know, he's a top
discuss.
Five talent for sure.
Well, look, and I think there's a lot of guys, but you know what? Let's get to it, man. We got to get to the NFL, but we have to talk BCS Championship. We've been waiting for this a long time. 13-0, Florida State. People can question, you know, their schedule, you know, 8-0 in ACC against 12-1 Auburn, 7-1 in the SEC. This is what it's all about, and I'm going to take a hit at it first. Number one, happy birthday to the 20-year-old famous Jameis Winston. You know what? This kid is such a leader. I mean, you hear all these different stories and press clippings. He comes out and runs ahead of the guys so he can look each one of them in the eye and give them a positive word of encouragement before the game. That is amazing for a redshirt freshman. Threw for 3,800 yards. I can't even imagine 38 TDs, Ray. This is amazing. So when I look at this game, right, I look at Freeman, I look at Winston, I look at their offense, you know, Green, all their talent, and you try to think, right, project them in the SEC to see what, you know, what they could do, how they could place. And then I look at Marshall. I mean, I look at Nick Marshall, I look at Mason, and I look at what Auburn does, and I look at Coates. They have had over a month to prepare for this game. And one thing that's fascinating to me about it is that I think Jimbo Fisher and Florida State's defense has an opportunity to show and break the streak of, you know, potentially 8 in a row for the SEC out of what? They've won 10 out of the 16 BCS title games total. That's pretty impressive. And I think this game tonight, can they handle Mason and the running game? And can they, you know, sort of watch out for when Marshall does decide that he's not running it and he's passing it because he threw for, you know, 1,700 yards. I say that Florida State, the difference is Winston. And I think, Ray, that honestly this kid is something special. And if he could petition, he could come out and be the number one pick this year. And I think on his birthday, he gets the crystal ball and gets the trophy. I think Florida State shocks everybody because a lot of people think SEC is just dominant. Even though they're number one, I think Florida State gives it to Auburn in a great, great game. I say they win 34-30. There's going to be some points tonight, and it's going to be fun.
Well, here's the thing. You could say against pretty mediocre competition, right? But the Florida State Seminoles average 53 points a game, number one in the nation. So if they score 11 points, they will have averaged 50 points a game for this season, which is pretty unbelievable. So to me, Florida State's a 10-point favorite, as they should be, and it's pretty – it's almost blasphemous to say that an SEC team is an underdog in a national championship game, but that's the deal. Now, the only way Auburn wins is they have to do two things. They have to run the ball, obviously. I think they're number one in the nation in rushing yards. I think they average almost 345 yards a game on the ground.
Yeah.
But also, they need to confuse Winston. They need to get in Winston's face. They need to play man-to-man on the outside. They need to bring – hopefully, for Auburn's sake, they can get to him with four or maybe five, but they need to confuse him with coverages. They need to go man-to-man. They need to go cover two. They need to change up so that he gets confused and plays like a freshman, because this kid, Famous Jameis, there's a reason he won the National Player of the Year and you know, the Heisman Trophy, and all the, you know, all the accolades that are due to him. And – the problem ultimately for Auburn is I think they're the 83rd ranked defense and they're 111 against the pass, and they have to defend against Green, Benjamin, Kenny Shaw, and even Nick O'Leary. I mean, these guys are just studs on the outside. So let's say you've got one corner, two corners. You need four guys between your corners and your safeties who can cover them, and I just don't think you have that. So what will happen is Florida State's putting up points. So the question is, can a running team, who usually takes more possessions, they need to either possess the ball for 35, 40 minutes, or they need to score a lot. And I think they won't. I just think Florida State's too good. I think Florida State puts up 40. And there's a team that's averaging 53, so 40 isn't even that much. So I think they win 40-28. I think it's a pretty one-sided game.
Okay. Well, so let me ask you this, though. Can Marshall step up and sort of get you potentially, you know, can he do a Kaepernick? Can he get you 200 yards passing with 70 to 90 yards rushing and shock the world? Or is that something where you just think Florida State's got a strong enough defense that won't happen? Because I agree about all in secondary, you know. But I guess Nick Marshall is the one factor in this game. If he changes because he's played a great season, but if he plays out of his mind, he could be the difference maker.
Marshall can, and having Mason there is you know, takes some of the pressure off.
They lost soul, baby. Mason.
Shout him out. Plug one. Shout out to Plug one.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's possible. Look, they shocked Georgia. They shocked Alabama. So it's possible that Auburn wins. I just think that unless you can shake up Winston and unless you can stop that Florida State talent on the outside, they're just too talented offensively. And Auburn's D is not even as good as the Auburn D that won the national championship with Cam Newton in 2010. So I think that the SEC streak of national championships ends at 7 in a row. And the Florida State Seminoles take care of business.
Well, Ray and Tay are agreeing for once. Well, you know, let's talk about the guys that play on Sunday. And we got to go to I think it was a classic. And I'll say this, and I kind of, you know, I would say this. The mystique of Lambeau Field, to me, is kind of dwindling and it's kind of over. I think what the Niners did yesterday, they were sort of expected to do, right? I mean, they, you know, they're a better team. But I think Aaron Rodgers, not that he was rusty per se, but I think Aaron Rodgers, if his defense only gives up 23 points as, you know, the gazillion-million-dollar man, you got to score more points to beat the Niners. And even he said it in his press conference. And I think he's right. I think if you're honest, you got to say, we got to at least put up 27, 28 points. But, you know, we both predicted the Niners to win. They did it. I thought it was a great game. And I think what we saw in all the games, the better quarterback won, except for in the Packer-Niner game. But I think right now Colin Kaepernick is on the verge of something else. I mean, the kid was electric yesterday. Passing, he got every clutch first down. The pass to Vernon Davis for the touchdown, the Burnett or Bush came too far from the edge and turned in, and then Kaepernick ran and got that first down on the third,
nice
and I think it was 8.
Nice pick up by Frank Gore.
It was amazing, Ray, and I just think Crabtree is back, and, you know, 125 yards receiving. This Niner team is now officially dangerous. And I think Niners-Panthers, like Kaepernick said, oh, they were like, oh, interview him. Are you cold? He was like, nah, me and Bo, Navarro Bowman, we got our shirts out, our sleeves out, and we're going
That's
to
crazy.
Revenge.
You know they were cold.
I know they were cold.
They were just
Listen,
trying to be.
Give him credit. He's a Packer fan. He's from Wisconsin, and he beat his favorite team that he grew up with, right? You know, 16 for 30, not crazy stats, 227, but he did his thing with the rushing. But I'll tell you this, Kaepernick, he's a winner. And I was really impressed with him yesterday, but I also loved, of course, what Eddie Lacy and you know, the Packers were able to do. But, you know, Ed Reed maybe made the play of the game from LSU when he tackled Cobb, because if he didn't get that tackle, Cobb could have scored a touchdown, and then they held him to that field goal when it was 20-17. That was huge. So good
yeah,
game to the Packers, good game to Lacy.
It just tells you
yeah.
how close these two teams are and any playoff teams, right? Because two or three plays could have
yeah.
easily made this game go the other way. So even though San Francisco is still my pick to win it all, they are in no way, you know,
Carolina,
the dominant team. But they could beat anybody, right? So
yeah.
I still have them winning it all. But, again, if Rodgers, if Cobb catches one or two balls from Rodgers, or if Kaepernick gets picked off, which he could have easily been picked off in the fourth quarter,
yeah,
if he
on
holds
that
on
drive,
to the ball,
yeah.
that's it. So, you know, good win for the Niners. The good thing about the Niners is their type of football travels, and if they go to the championship and, in fact, go to Super Bowl, they're going to have to win these games on the road. So they'll be, you know, probably Carolina and Seattle or, you know, maybe New Orleans. But actually, if New Orleans wins, they would be – oh, if New Orleans wins, they would host
No,
them,
New
right?
Orleans goes to Seattle. The Niners are going to the Panthers. And
no, I know. I'm just
saying,
if New Orleans beats Seattle,
oh,
then
go back to Candlestick. You
go
got
to
bring
the
dust off and the cobwebs off of Candlestick. Yeah.
Yeah. Wait for my prediction on Friday. We might have something interesting.
We'll definitely do it. So look, let's go to the game that prophetic Tay picked two. I didn't even pick it this week. I picked it 2 weeks ago in our segment. You're not ready. I said the Chargers would not only make the playoffs. Playoffs that they would go to Cincinnati in the 3-6 matchup and beat the Bengals. And you know what, folks? They did it. I got to toot my horn in a season where, you know, I did good picking, but I had some rough, you know, times with fantasy football. So we got to applaud Tay. 27-10. Let's applaud Ronnie Brown. Let's applaud the Chargers defense, Mike McCoy. They ran the ball more than they passed it. The Bengals didn't run it enough. Andy Dalton, they were killing him on Twitter, Ray, calling him Andy Romo. He threw it 51 times. Now, I don't know, you might want to say it's Marvin Lewis's fault. He's 0-5 now in the playoffs. But you know what? Jay Gruden was a little too pass happy, and he's the OC. He's probably going to get a job. Him and Zimmer might get jobs. I think Zimmer will definitely get one. Great defense. And, you know, they played good D against the Chargers. It's just that Andy Dalton lost this game for the Bengals. I mean, Giovanni had that fumble, but it was Andy Dalton.
You're right. That was the
yeah.
turning point in the game, though. You're right. Andy Dalton
yeah.
lost the game. You can't turn the ball over three times, two interceptions and one fumble. Especially the fumble was an unforced error. That was ridiculous.
Yeah.
You can't turn it over three times and lose the game. But the difference was Giovanni Bernard fumbling at the two. And then instead of going up by a touchdown, you end up giving up because they take the ball the other way and score a touchdown. So that's a 14-point swing. And it just kills your momentum. And ever since that play, you're pressing. They were never able to get A.J. Green in the game.
Yeah.
Marvin Jones did his thing.
Got
so he
busy,
did great.
Yeah.
But
196 on the ground for the Chargers.
But ultimately the Chargers had too much. And that three-headed monster, you know, Matthews, Woodhead, and Brown – they just
like
held the ball, and Phillip Rivers didn't do too much. He just did enough to win, and that should be very interesting next week when they go to Denver, right, because their coach
yeah.
is from Denver, and they beat Denver in Week 15. So we'll
yeah.
talk about that on Friday.
Without
Wes
Welker, but
to the Chargers.
So they still did it. Yeah. No, kudos to the Chargers, without a doubt. And, you know, the NFL is exciting. It's just so amazing, the playoffs, and like you said, so close. So then we go to Saturday, right? We'll go to the late game. This one was amazing. Ray picked it. And you know what? I think what you saw here was exactly the recipe for them to go to Seattle and win. Rob Ryan is hot with the defense. You know, I'm worried about Keenan Lewis, the Steeler corner that went over to New Orleans, got hurt. You'll see, you know, if he can play. But I think, you know, 26-24, and it wasn't a huge game by Breeze, but he had some, you know, clutch passes to Jimmy Graham, you know, get some big first downs. But I think what you saw here was that they broke Philly's rhythm. Philly couldn't just get going, and for a while, DeSean Jackson was on lock. He caught a couple of passes after Lewis went down, but basically the Saints' defense played amazing, and this is without Vaccaro and Jabari Greer, so they already lost two of their best secondary guys. And, you know, Riley Cooper, if he doesn't drop that ball with that perfect play that they picked, you know, prepared on third down, he could have ran for maybe a touchdown, at least 30 to 40 yards. And that was it for them. Give credit to Ingram, you know, 18 for 97. He shows up, Ray, from Alabama, a Heisman guy, and that's the key to me. I mean, yeah, Breeze, 250, but I think it was the running of Ingram and just the fact that the Saints, they kept that explosive offense of the Eagles off the field. So I was impressed. And I told you, Kyrie Robinson had a nice game, 45 yards, over 4 yards,
yeah,
5 yards a carry, Ray.
Yeah, I think ultimately – ultimately, Philly – look, Philly's got to be encouraged by this season,
oh, yeah,
by the offense under Chip Kelly, by the emergence of Nick Foles. So yeah, what if he doesn't win his first game? He should have, and he could have, but you
and
know what?
They did this without no Macklin. They didn't have Macklin,
yes,
all season.
Without Jeremy Macklin. Yeah. And you know what? Without DeSean Jackson, too. I mean, for three quarters, this dude was – I don't know what he was doing. But that's why we'll talk about DeSean Jackson on another episode. But – this guy is the ultimate playmaker, but when he's out, it's like he's totally out of the game, right? He didn't even make.
I think that wasn't his fault. I think it was you got to give him some either, you know, wide receiver screens. You got to give him maybe a reverse. But I think Keenan Lewis did a great job. He just had him on lock. He had him on lock.
Okay, so if you're one of the best receivers in the game,
well, look, they're locked down
AJ
Green.
Taken out of the game by Keenan Lewis, with all due respect. Keenan Lewis
not. What happened to my man AJ Green and the Bengals? You could rip him, right?
Yeah.
Three for what, 36 too, or 3 for 34, 39?
Yeah, he had a big drop. Yeah, we'll rip him too.
Yeah.
He had two drops.
Yeah.
This is where you need to step up. But I think that the Eagles fans need to just relax. It was a good season, and
yeah,
you just take it from there. The Saints, right, they could have lost the game, but ultimately they found a way to win despite a mediocre game by Breeze, which should be encouraging for them because
yeah,
they
Shane
still have
Graham,
a bad
baby
taste in their mouth. Yeah, the signing, what they signed him 2 weeks ago? The bad
yeah
taste in their mouth still exists from their shellacking on Monday night in Seattle. Or Sunday night?
Yeah.
Monday night, one of those. It was on national TV.
Monday night ESPN.
So this will be a great game, and I tell you what, the Saints are encouraged too because they played a
yeah
bad game and won on the road, in the cold, in Philly. So
but it was
Rob
a smart
Ryan
game.
Yeah, Rob Ryan is making, you know, every day goes by, he's making your boy Jerry Jones look a little sillier and sillier.
Gotcha.
But,
hey, but last but not least, let's get to it. The Colts over the Chiefs, 45-44, the second greatest playoff comeback ever. Ray and I, we saw the first one. You know what was fascinating about this? You're down 28, and in my head I was thinking, wow, no Jamal Charles. Miles Davis didn't get hurt till what, the end of the third or the fourth quarter, but no Jamal Charles for most of the game. And in my head, I was thinking, can Andrew Luck do this? How's he going to do this? And you know what? He found a way. You got to kill the Chiefs secondary because you know what? You cannot let T.Y. Hilton by himself single-handedly beat you like that. I mean, it was ridiculous. 13 receptions for 224, Ray. He was doing a Sammy Watkins, two touchdowns in the playoffs. That was huge. Right now,
sure
T.Y. Hilton is Reggie Wayne and Marvin Harrison together. And kudos to Andrew Luck. I think this guy is a clutch winner. I mean, to bounce back from three interceptions and throw for 443 yards, four touchdowns,
oh,
that
he's
is
the real
just amazing.
Deal.
Yeah.
And you know what? Give Andrew Luck credit, not only because of his performance, but because of his demeanor. Apparently, this guy was
composure,
just calm.
Yeah.
He said, look, let's
yeah
just score on this drive. Let's take it. Drive one drive at a time, you know, with Donald Brown and Colby Fleener and of course T.Y. Hilton and Brazil and these guys. These are not household names, but Andrew Luck is the real deal. I'm going to point the finger, though, on the other side. You know how a lot of Fortune 500 corporations, they have a chief strategy officer. So I'm thinking Andy Reid needs to hire a chief strategy officer because his genius on offense, and we kept killing him in Philly, and we kept saying, wait a minute, you have Brian Westbrook, you have LeSean McCoy, you've got unbelievable talent at the running back position. Why are you throwing so much? I understand you love the West Coast offense, and I understand that short passes are like throws, and Bill Walsh taught us all that. But here's the thing. The Colts had seven possessions in the second half. You can't give up seven possessions in the second half when you're
They only
off
ran it for 32 carries. Now
you
they
have
18.
To protect that lead. You have to run the ball. You can even throw short passes.
I got
to
tell you this, though. A candidate for doing more with less, he is no longer a game manager. With just Dwayne Bowe and losing Charles, what Alex Smith did, 30 for 46, 378 yards, and four touchdowns, no interceptions. Alex Smith did not lose this game, ladies and gentlemen.
No, he made a
that
name
boy
for
played,
himself.
He played his butt off.
You put up 44 in a playoff game
you're supposed to win.
On the road? That you did your job. You did your job.
He did
and
job.
And you're right. And remember, he's the number one overall pick. So it's not like this guy's a seventh rounder out of Bowling Green. This guy is the number one overall pick. So, but good for Alex Smith, right? He kind of got a raw deal in San Francisco. He feels, but at least he's doing it in Kansas City. And you know what? This has got to be encouraging for Kansas City too. I mean, to go from 2-14 to basically a 9-0 start. They sputtered a little bit in the second half, but they lost Ali and Houston at the same time. This team with Jamal Charles and Alex Smith, Dwayne Bowe, they've got
some
talent.
They just
on
need to recite. They need Sammy Watkins.
Defense.
They
well,
need Sammy Watkins.
Draft high enough to get
no.
Sammy Watkins, but yeah.
But
it
maybe
looks like we've
can
got
get
our
Mike
caller.
Evans. Yeah.
Looks like we've got our caller.
We've got our guest.
Hello, here. You're on with Ray and Tay today.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Good, hey. good. Is Andrew?
This is Andrew.
Hey, how are you?
Hey,
I didn't recognize your voice on the air.
Hey, no problem.
All right, so we'd like to welcome you to the show, and why don't you introduce yourself to our fans? We gave you a little bit of an introduction in the beginning, but introduce yourself to our fans, let them know what you do, and then if you don't mind, we'll jump into some questions.
Yeah, sure. My name is Andrew Moscato. I produce sports documentaries with Bobby Valentine. I made a film about him for ESPN a while back called The Zen of Bobby V, which was about his, mega celebrity status over in Japan. And so when he came back to Japan in 2010, we started this production company together. And we made a few sports films, and one of which recently came out called School, The Price of College Sports, which is about the business and evils of the NCAA. Although I guess I probably shouldn't say evils. I should probably be more objective, but I guess...
We like opinions here.
It was great. It was fantastic. So, well, let's jump in. Ray, hit him up with the first question. And Andrew, I got to say, that was... It's one of the best documentaries I've ever seen. I definitely just have to say that right off the bat. Thoroughly entertained, a lot of knowledge and information in it for sports people and just for anyone because, most folks went to college. It's fascinating stuff.
Thank you. Yeah, that was definitely the challenge is kind of making it palatable for non-sports fans but also giving sports fans something that maybe they hadn't heard before.
Yeah, that was great. So let's start with that. How did you get into the sports documentary business? I mean, this is a business that – not everybody goes into coming, graduating school. You said you had started with Bobby Valentine in Japan. I remember you mentioned that story.
Right.
But tell us how you started.
Yeah, well, I was actually still at school. I was at NYU for film. My buddies and I were looking for projects to do. And, so we'd shoot films over the summer, and we were doing one about rugby of all sports. And we got the attention of ESPN. This was pre 30 for 30 ESPN, so it's not like we had this whole plan of making a documentary for ESPN, but it kind of came about that way that we got their attention. They clearly weren't into the rugby thing, but they were kind of in us as filmmakers, and we had this idea of following Bobby around Japan because, me and my partners had read this article after Bobby won the Japan series over there in 2005 about how he had a beer named after him, a hamburger named after him, a hot dog. It was literally... like cruising with Elvis in Japan, no joke.
Right.
And so they obviously knew Bobby, and, you know, it's a longer story that could probably fill up a whole other podcast, but it's, you know, we had reached out to Bobby originally, and he said, yeah, sure, sure. And when we actually had the meeting with ESPN, we kind of had to go back to him and say, hey, we're those kids in college who want to make a movie about you. Can you come to this meeting at ESPN? And he told us that was the worst idea he had ever heard, and it would never work out. But long story short, he showed up to me at ESPN and then kind of said, you know, I'm only doing it with these guys. The movie needs to be made now. This was right around the Dice Came At the Zaka frenzy, kind of end of 2006. We were over there in 2007
right.
for the entire baseball season.
That's awesome.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it premiered at Tribeca Film Festival in 2008, and then it was on ESPN, and then all of a sudden ESPN started making more sports documentaries. So it was pretty cool.
And then Bill Simmons goes out and makes 30 for 30.
Exactly. Yep.
That's
so,
great.
Yeah,
what's it like being around these
guinea pig?
Yeah. Well, what's it like being around all these sports guys? I mean, is it hard to get access? I mean, as a documentarian, you need to, you know, really show them at their, I don't know, show vulnerabilities and show them as people, as opposed to just, you know, filming them on the court, on the field. So what's that like? What's that interaction like?
Yeah, well, it's all about trust. And I think that goes for any type of documentary, not just sports. But, you know, athletes definitely are a lot savvier than your typical person only because they're around media and cameras all the time. And I'd say that was probably the biggest challenge, surprisingly, in making school was getting athletes to speak to us on camera about their experiences, whether, you know, they're playing basketball or football. And it was a surprise because one of our partners on the film, Dominique Foxworth, you know, former NFL player, current
Maryland
president of the NFL. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, Dominique has quite a reputation and, you know, now he's a president of the NFLPA. And even with him kind of vouching for us, you know, it was pulling teeth, literally. Well, not literally, but it was pretty hard getting guys to speak to us. And we were very fortunate that we finally found Arian Foster, who was willing to step up, talk to us on the record, and you know what he told us, and which made it to the film about him getting paid while playing at University of Tennessee was pretty big news, and certainly helped the film, and I think helped the cause of you know making people aware of the realities of college sports.
Definitely, and you know that's exactly where I wanted to go. You know, watching Schooled, and, you know, you talked about Dominique, and I am a graduate of the University of Maryland. And, you know, for me, when you had him talking and then Arian Foster said what he said about, you know, getting paid and the coach bringing, you know, tacos and players dealing drugs, you know, I'm not going to out anybody and name any name, but when I was at Maryland, I, you know, knew a couple of basketball players who, you know, were dealing marijuana on the side because the reality is, just like in your documentary, these guys are basically professional athletes, and their schedule, like Dominique said, you know, they pay me to get, you know, they want me to get the interceptions on Saturday, so just getting a C is a lot better than me getting an A, you know. So the hypocrisy of saying they're student athletes is sort of a joke. Can you sort of give us, you know, you sort of hinted at it, your personal opinion in terms of doing this and all the knowledge and information you researched about buyers and how everything developed with the NCAA and how it formed, what's next? Where do you think it's going to go? And will players ever get some sort of stipend? And do you think that they deserve one?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is they already do get a stipend. And I think it goes back to the general public just understanding the reality of the situation. And because right now the people who control that whole public discussion, for the most part, is the NCAA. And folks like ESPN
right.
kind of complicit in sending their message because they're business partners. So I think people have to realize that, yeah, these guys are already getting money for food, housing, and all that stuff. The question is, should we give them more?
Right.
The other reality, which is pretty sad, you know, you mentioned guys dealing drugs. Arian also told us, and I believe that a lot of guys, when they get that stipend money for, you know, meals for the month, for rent, they send it back home.
Definitely.
So
yeah.
There's a lot of kind of scary realities that I think a lot of the typical fans don't want to look at or address. And I would consider myself one of those people before I started the project. I'd say I was your typical fan who said, oh, they get a free education, you know, and if you were given anything more, it would ruin college sports. And I think that's kind of the knee-jerk reaction, and then people just go on and just watch the football games and basketball games, and no one thinks twice about it. But the reality is it's a big business, and it's become a big business, and the athletes are the ones who are entertaining us, and they're the ones who get cut out of this in seemingly every way possible.
So your next project is focused on chess, right? And I want you to tell us about it, you know, give us a little, you know, pub on it called Chessmate. But I'm sort of curious how now going forward, you know, and obviously you had the film with Ralph Branca, you know, and Bobby Thompson, and the Giants won the pennant and all that. How do you decide to choose your topics, and will you, do you feel that you'll always now with Bobby Valentine stick with strictly sports?
Oh, yeah. The goal is definitely for now to focus on, you know, making sports films. I think Schooled is a great model. And we also did another one called Pelotero, Ballplayer Pelotero, which is, you know, on iTunes and Netflix now. But that created some controversy last year because Bud Selig wasn't too happy about that one. It kind of gives a very unvarnished look at the Dominican baseball system. But, the chess film that I've been working on has been going on for a while, and it'll be interesting to see if anything comes of that. It's basically about the Princeton chess team and this tournament they play with the inmates of New Jersey State Prison in Trenton. And that's kind of been stop and go because, you know, there's been issues with the state budget and, you know, they've been layoffs. There's been layoffs in the Department of Corrections. So that's something that we've kind of kept our finger on the pulse of. But, you know, so hopefully we'll have enough footage where we'll make that into a film and get it out there. But, you know, other issues we're looking at, I'd say drug testing in sports, you know, is looking like potentially a subject we might look at.
Huge issue.
Oh, yeah, and I think that's another thing where the average fan hears, oh, these guys are being tested for drugs, great, and then they move on, not really thinking twice of, well, you know, what are the parameters for being tested? Are they catching people with drug tests? Who are these people administering them? So that's definitely a world ripe for kind of corruption and big business. Because Jay Billis points out in the film, you know, a large industrial complex has been built around NCAA enforcement. So the NCAA and all those lawyers love the scandals, these so-called scandals, because it just means more business. And I think drug testing has kind of become that same way.
Right, but it must give you a ton of pleasure to hit these hot topics, right, and then see what comes out of it, and then hopefully even facilitate change, or at the very least facilitate discussion. I guess that's a great thing. I would imagine being somebody in the documentary business, you can take a controversial topic, and without even revealing your opinion, if you get the discourse, if you get people talking about it, then you've done your job. I mean, that's great. If we can start talking about whether or not to pay college athletes, how to test for drugs, I mean, these are all really, really hot topics, and kudos to you for getting out there, presenting an opinion, and getting people talking about it. Are you following up with with some of the people and some of the issues that you've done? So, for example, school that was what, about a year or two ago?
We actually just wrapped. The last thing we shot for that was this past June.
Okay.
Aired in October. So. And that's on DVD and iTunes now. But, we're thinking of doing a follow-up because a lot's been going on with the NCAA. One of the cases in...
Yeah, the Eddie O'Bannon case, right?
Yeah, the Eddie O'Bannon case.
The video games, yeah.
It's going to go to trial in June. There's also the other case dealing with UNC Chapel Hill and academic fraud.
That was so unfair. You felt sorry for someone who was doing something right, and then basically, you know, is like the scapegoat for the whole system.
Right. Well, and then the other big issue at Chapel Hill is the fact that they have these no-show classes, basically, you know, a way to keep
independent studies. Yeah.
And the professor that they kind of blame that all on is actually being faced with felony charges. A lot, and just in the stuff we've addressed in the film, lots going on. And then coming up, I think in a couple of weeks is the big NCAA conference in San Diego, where there's been promised rule changes or whatnot from Jim Delaney and the rest of the conference commissioners. But I don't know. To me, this reeks of the reserve clause, Major League Baseball all over again. I mean, that was certainly before
exactly,
my time.
Exactly.
But watching some of the newsreels and you know. Documentaries on that subject, it's the same argument. All the owners said it would destroy baseball, their teams would go bankrupt, yada, yada, yada. And I think Major League Baseball is doing pretty fine. And Yeah, I think Taylor Branch in our film points out that nobody roots any less for Michael Phelps just because he's endorsed by Subway.
Or he does there you go.
So would it really you know, tarnish our enjoyment of March Madness if somebody was able to get money from Adidas the way their university does?
No, probably not. Let me ask you this, Andrew, because this is one that we've touched on our show. We had someone, you know, a guest on our show. His name is Ricky Rivers in the New York tri-state area. He works with young kids doing a junior pros program for, like, you know, 7th, 8th graders in basketball. And right now, I mean, and obviously you had the guy from Nike on in your documentary.
Oh, yeah, Sonny
Vaccaro.
Yeah, Sonny Vaccaro, who we've known about for years and, you know, growing up playing basketball and all the different camps. But what I find fascinating, and this is a serious documentary, because you have now kids are being scouted, for, especially in college basketball, from fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth grade. They're, you know, leaving and going to the prep schools. They're also being held back a year. And this is what's really fascinating. Children are being held back a year, so they're sort of bigger, you know,
right,
and stronger to, you know, then be, you know, the 18 or 19-year-old freshman, and so they have a better chance of playing, you know, Division I and going to college. So, I mean, what do you think about things like that, and are those type of topics things that, you know, wet your whistle for your company and potentially even, you know, touching on subjects like that, maybe the exploitation of these children, because they're not getting proper education.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, and that was one of the themes we explored in Ballplayer Pelotero, was basically the Dominican Republic has become a sweatshop for baseball. I mean, they have skyrocketing unemployment, and so a lot of these families are basically playing the lottery with their sons, saying, look, I don't care if you don't like baseball. You're going to go to one of these academies, train for 3 years, and by the time you turn 16, you're going to get hopefully a contract with the major league team. And the reality is, you know, just like with college sports, only you know, 2% of those Dominicans actually get signed to a major league team, just like probably only 2% of college football or men's basketball players actually make it to the next level. But I think having a partner in Bobby Valentine is certainly good, because he's one who's not, he does not shy away from controversy, and I think he kind of has that reputation.
Bobby V.
So I think,
we love Bobby,
yeah,
man. You got to tell
him.
Yeah,
what's he up to? Real quick, what's Bobby up to these days?
He is, of all things, he's an athletic director at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield, Connecticut.
That's right,
oh, that's right. I remember that.
Very much. Well, yeah, this is a funny story. So one of the reasons why Pelotero created a lot of controversy was because Bobby was an active major league manager when it came out in theaters in July of 2012. So,
right, the Red
you know,
Sox,
Bud Selig
yeah.
called up the Red Sox ownership and said, I don't want Valentine promoting the movie. And Bobby had already done a lot of interviews, and he'd already made commitments to show up at screenings. So I had to go up to Boston and try to kind of put out fires where I could. And I said to him, well, at least, you know, when the NCAA film comes out, you won't be in the center of the controversy. And he's like, well, why not? I'm not going to be a producer on that movie, too. And I said, no, you are, but no one is going to really look to you when it comes to college sports. And then sure enough, a month after he gets canned by the Red Sox, he says, guess what? I'm going to be an athletic director at Division I college.
Wow, that's funny. That comes full circle.
yeah. So he kind of has a knack for sticking his nose where at least where the controversy is from our viewpoint. So
that's
you know, fortunately, we haven't gotten him fired from this job yet, and it sounds like he's doing well. And he had, I guess, his football team, which is I guess FCS, had a good season. They made it to the playoffs. So yeah, he's happy.
Good for him. Hey, Andrew, this has been great. We had a great time talking to you. Tell our audience where they can find your films, where they can find you on social media. Just let them know whatever you want to know, whatever you want our audience to know. Let them know about you, and we will certainly be following you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, the Schooled Twitter handle is @SchooledFilm. I'm at AJ Moscato. And our films, Ballplayer, Pelotero, Branca's Pitch, and Schooled, The Price of College Sports, are all available on DVD and iTunes. So you can check them out there.
That's great. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Maybe we'll have you back if you want
to
promote one of your films. We'll have
definitely,
you back on the show, and we had a blast.
All right. Thanks, fellas. Have a good night.
Thanks,
we
Andrew.
Enjoyed
Take
it,
care.
Andrew. Take care, buddy.
You got it. You too. Bye.
Wow, that was awesome. And can I tell you, man, everyone needs to see. And you know what? Go to iTunes and support this guy, because, you know, these are the type of films, when you look at even the Oscars, that, you know, one day he might be pulling down him and Bobby an Oscar, or, you know, Academy Award for, you know, documentaries. I mean, the quality of these documentaries is amazing. And look, he was sort of a pioneer.
Yeah, you need to have a thick skin when you do these documentaries, because you probably get more no's than you get yeses when people are talking about giving you access to the teams, to the leagues, to the players, you know, because you're more, for the most part, doing something that's controversial, or at the topic's controversial, right? The film usually isn't, but you know, with schools, how many no's did you think they got from NCAA schools and from athletics directors? And
yeah.
NCAA itself probably didn't want this film to be made. But these are the films that have to be made, right? Because if you want to get to controversial topics, you need to kick some stones and see what's underneath them.
You know, all throughout history in our country, and through just history, period, it's always pushing the envelope, being a renegade or a vanguard and a risk taker. And it's the arts, right, that always sort of push truth and change. And so kudos, you know, to him and to that. And it's impressive, man. And I, like I said, you know, I was just thoroughly entertained. But what it gave you was just a lot of knowledge and a history lesson. And it's deeper than just, oh, well, they get a stipend, they get room and board, these guys don't need to be paid, they're just greedy athletes, they sign their scholarship, free education, blah, blah, blah. And people are so dismissive of it, but they really don't see, like he said, even, you know, some players, like, sending whatever they did get, sending it back home because of the extreme poverty that still goes on in this country. So it's a lot deeper than, you know, than people could even imagine. So I thought it was great. So in a little bit of time that's left, it's time for us to talk a little NBA. And you know what I think that's fascinating is that, first of all, we got to mention, you know, they finally waived Hedo Turkoglu. And it's looking like the Clippers, right, without Chris Paul, and, you know, they signed Steven Jackson, that the Clippers might try to get Hedo Turkoglu, you know, to come play for them. I don't know what you think about that. Do you think Hedo's still got enough left to be a little veteran 3-4 off the bench for the Clippers?
I don't know. Ever since Hedo left Orlando the first time,
yeah,
I feel like his career has been on the downswing, and it's a young man's game. So I don't know. You got to feel like that savvy is still in him.
Right.
Remember those
and
finals with Rashard Lewis and Hedo Turkoglu?
Oh, yeah.
They gave people fits, that 3-4 combo. But I don't know. It's hard for me to think that he's got enough in the tank to really contribute meaningfully to a playoff contender. But you know,
How'd you like the next weekend? And like I said on the show, it was the Celtics in 08, you know, the only team in the last since, you know, 08 to sweep the Texas Triangle. Well, the Knicks, they almost did it. You know, they lost to the Rockets by 2, they, you know, beat Dallas by 12, beat the Spurs 11-22. We're still on the bottom because look, you know, Brooklyn's been hot and they're you know, starting to, you know, win some more. As a Knicks fan, I think there's some encouragement, right? You know, we had like, 5-6 guys in double figures last night. Chandler had a cold. The veteran Kenyon Martin steps up. I was happy. I was happy. I mean, look, the Raptors are still in first place at 16-16, so the Atlantic Division is not too far away. What are you thinking about the Knicks?
Well, the Knicks need to start winning. And the Knicks need to decide what they want to do with Carmelo. I think
you feel up against
the
clock.
Games, yeah, they're going to go up against the clock and maybe make a last-minute decision on that. But that division is there for the taking, right? So there's no reason to think that the Knicks couldn't win the Eastern Division. Toronto's at 16-16, and then right after them is Boston at 13-21. Brooklyn's 12-21, Philly's 12-21, and the Knicks are 11-22. So all of those teams are separated by 5 games. So there's no reason to think that any one of those teams can't win that division. You go on a 2-3 week, you know, you win like 10 out of 12 and you're in first
right,
place.
Yeah. Get a little win streak
going.
Winning,
right? So we can say that all we want, but we're in January, right? So you maybe get another 2-3 weeks and then you start thinking about the All-Star break. So it's doable. I think I can't help but laugh. By the way, did you see last night the Knicks beat the Mavs with your boy J.R. Smith? Did you see what he did?
No, tell me what he did.
Did you see what he did? So they were lining up for a free throw, and J.R. Smith came in the game, and he went over to Sean Marion, and he untied his shoelace. Like,
that's
he bent down as if he was tying his own, but he untied Sean Marion's shoelace. So he did, like, the okey-doke.
Hey, that is comedy to me. But I tell you, you know what's not comedy? The Golden State Warriors, Ray, are balling out.
Well,
they
went 8-0, right?
Yeah, they're 23-13, tied for first, the number 4 seed in the West, tied with the Clippers, who now without Chris Paul, you got to believe, are going to start to drop down, just like OKC has been losing a little bit without Westbrook. And then don't sleep, the number 7 seed, the Phoenix Suns, 20-12. They were projected to win 19 games. So kudos to what Jeff Hornacek is out there doing. The Pacers have the best record in the NBA. And, so on and so on. You got a couple teams like OKC, Portland, and Miami with 7-8 losses. But the Pacers, 6 losses, and Granger is starting to play ball. I don't know if you noticed. This is what I liked about this team. The confidence that Stevenson built last year, and then, having a real legit scorer off the bench in Scola and Granger. And watch out, 27-6, the Indiana Pacers.
You know what?
Are
I feel like. I feel like the East is boring. I feel like wake me up last week in May when the series between Indiana and Miami starts, right? Hey, anything can happen, and you never know. Somebody could get hot, but ultimately it looks like a 1-2 in May. The West is where all the action is.
All the action's
there. Look at Golden State. They were out of the playoffs last week, and now they won 9 in a row, and they're in 4th place. Look at them just climbing. And you can point to exactly when Andre Iguodala came back and everybody started to play their normal positions. Harrison Barnes
coming
off the bench.
Well, health is important,
And they got healthy,
But you know what, Clyde is kept?
Well, I was about to say, I still believe losing Jarrett Jack is a big deal. I really liked him on that team last year, and I thought that he gave them minutes off the
bench. Same with Carl Landry.
Carl Landry, too.
And we said that
pressure
in our NBA preview, right? We both spoke about the fact that Tony Douglas and Jermaine O'Neal is not really a realistic replacement for losing Jack and Carl Landry. I just don't think it is. But I do know this. The Charlotte Hornets Bobcats are 15-20 with the 7th seed, baby. I'm rooting for – listen, I'm going all out for the Bobcats and Al Jefferson.
Oh, my God.
Look, as Al Horford got hurt, I don't root for that, but these teams are going to start to drop. And, the Washington Wizards – I wanted to call them the Bullets, but the Wizards at 14-17 are the 5th seed. But everybody, I think, that listens to Ray and Tay today religiously, and we thank all of our listeners, they want to see – Ray, rock the Charlotte Bobcats. We won't even let you get a Hornets new jersey. You're going to rock the Charlotte Bobcats jersey and tweet that out. It could be
Kemba
a T-shirt
Walker
or a jersey, but you got to rock
Gerald Henderson. I'll wear one of the guards.
Hey, real quick, let me just read this. I got an email. This is great. From Stephanie from New Jersey. And
okay,
Stephanie asks, with all the point guards being injured in Rose, Paul, and Westbrook, can we say now that John Wall is a top 5 point guard in the NBA?
Wow, good question.
That's a great,
so now,
that's a great
so
question,
if you take those
Stephanie.
3 out, you're saying is he a top 5? Well, look, you got to put Steph Curry in there, right? Even though he's not a pure point guard, but
maybe
he plays
Lillard,
a point. Dame Lillard,
Curry,
Tony Parker.
Maybe Kyrie, but John Wall's playing better than Kyrie this year.
He's
pretty
close.
That.
You could say that. So that's it in the West, and then maybe in the East, John Wall. Yeah, Rondo's not back yet.
He's not playing. So
Darren
just
Williams
say,
isn't playing great.
Yeah.
Paul is out.
Ty Lawson's doing okay.
Ty Lawson, probably I'd probably give it to Ty Lawson over John Wall, maybe because of his consistency.
They're 16 and 17, yeah. But that's a great. It's definitely sort of legit because you know John Wall, he's been playing ball, and you know what? They're in the fifth seed in the East. It's not, you know, it is the East, but hey, you know, you got to give them some props. So I think that definitely. Well, listen, great show. I think, you know, everybody needs to check out Andrew Moscato and his documentaries. I haven't seen the one about the Dominican Republic and the baseball players. That one has got to be amazing and fascinating to see. And I think it was just great to, you know, have him on and find out about what he's doing in the films and Bobby V. Tonight, man, we got it. You know, this is it. This is what we've been waiting for. We spoke to Charles Davis about it when we had him on our preview show. And it's not Bama, which is what I thought they'd be, but it's not Bama. But Florida State Auburn, it can't get much better, Ray.
It's that other team from Alabama in the
SEC.
That's
right, War Eagle, right? War Eagle. So, well, we'll be back Friday. You know, same bat time, same bat channel. You know, go to rayandtaytoday.com. Listen to our back shows. Some, you know, great interviews, great guests. You know, check us talking to, you know, Seth Davis, Al Troutwig. You know, George Reister, you know, a bunch of people, Jeff Zilgit talking to NBA, and listen to, you know, us talking to Andrew Moscato about sports documentaries. I love it. So thanks for listening. And Ray and Tate today, we're out talking sports.
Sports with friends. See
with
you on
friends.
Friday.
Enjoy.
Here we are. Here we are.